So, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. So this is the second class in our five-week series of Life at Ananda. And tonight we're going to focus on work and service. And we have, as we mentioned last week, we have a little fun interlude between my presentation and Jyotish's, and I think you'll all enjoy it. We'll introduce it later. So, and at the end, we'll offer time for questions, as we said on the phone message. Well, Master said that his path was one of a balance of meditation and service. And we're not going to talk about meditation per se, because that's a different topic. But it was one of the two pillars of what he came to bring. And we need to understand why it is so important. Because we were talking last week about Ananda being a complete yogic lifestyle. And if we think of, I always found it very interesting when we think about meditation and the evolution of, say, any focused meditation practice like the Hong Sa technique. The way it's kind of described is you can control everything else. You can shut out the sounds from your ears. You can close your eyes. You can hold your body still. You cannot talk, not use your sense of touch. But the one thing that we can't stop is the movement of the breath. And therefore, the great saints and sages said, let's focus on that. Let's not see it as a distraction, but let's see it as a point of focus that it can take us deeper into our own inner self. And so they developed pranayama and breathing techniques and the Hong Sa technique, where we concentrate on that one movement that we can't eliminate. Except until we go into the breathless state, but just for beginners. Well, that's why Master said it's important to see a balance between our life is a balance of meditation and service, because with service, it's the same thing. We can cut off all our attachments and our involvement with the world. We cannot identify with it. But nevertheless, we have to act. As long as we're living in this world, action and doing is a part of this plane of existence. So rather than saying, oh, I'm going to just be a hermit and lock myself up in a cave and never do anything and just not and get involved in the world, Master says, take that irremovable factor of the need to act and use it and go deep with it and focus on it, but in the same way, with consciousness that it is a divine flow. So to spiritualize the breath and to spiritualize activity so that both of them that we can't get rid of, we might as well use them as like a lever to remove the huge boulder of our egoic consciousness and have greater freedom in spirit. And I thought it would be fun. I took some time this afternoon. Well, before I get that, I want to read you. This is from our guidelines, which we study, new members study. But, you know, it's so good to get back to the basics. And this is what Swamiji says about work is service. All Ananda members should view whatever gainful employment they seek as service, never merely as work. The mere thought of hard work, indeed, often drains a person's energies, whereas joyful, willing service opens inner floodgates to a boundless supply of energy. And in the New Path, Swami's autobiography, you know, there's a wonderful chapter, Work Versus Meditation, and he gives so many great examples how Master worked with the disciples. There was one woman who was a very, very hard worker, and Master said to her, you mustn't work so hard, you must work less. And then he gave her more stuff to do. And she couldn't figure it out. And this happened 3 or 4 times. He said, you're working too hard. You're going to ruin your health. You've worked enough for 3 incarnations in this one lifetime. And then he put more on her plate. And so finally, she just, you know, this is how God works with us, how the guru works with us. He takes us to the breaking point of it through illogic. I mean, it's the same principle of the Zen koan. It doesn't make any sense, and so you slip into a superconscious state because the rational mind can't deal with it. So it's the same thing. Master kept pushing her, and finally she just started laughing. And she said, Master, instead of calling it work, why don't we call our activities here service? And then he laughed himself, and he said, it's been a good show, but you were working with tension. And therefore, you always felt tired. But if you work with freedom and with joy, you will discover boundless reservoirs of energy. And, you know, we see this all around us in this marvelous community that we live in. And this is what I wanted to, I had fun this afternoon, Jatishan, I had fun. And I want to read you this. This is 101 Ways We Serve at Ananda. We raise cows, we take care of goats and chickens, we grow vegetables and fruits, we build and maintain water systems, we do property management and put in roads and walking trails, we develop new property and make it ready for development, we build and maintain homes, we do community planning and develop master plans. We do phone lists and birthday lists and weekly villagers. We oversee the membership process. We teach children and run schools. We start colleges and teach college-level classes. We run clinics and we serve as doctors and nurses, both here and in town, and clerical support. We raise children and we build marriages. We train and counsel new members. We run markets and stock shelves and cook lunches. We run a phone system. We operate a blacksmith shop. We design beautiful gardens and plant tulips. We maintain Crystal Hermitage and keep all its systems working. We pray for others and run healing prayer councils. We teach people Kriya and support their practice. We train choirs and perform music every week of the year. We sell gems and make jewelry. We design and publish books and market them globally. We ship out Ananda books and products. We develop websites. We make meditation benches and cushions. We develop online businesses and boutiques. We make sandwiches and hummus and cookies for the market. We offer online classes and webinars. We commute or telecommute for jobs in the high-tech industry. We do art and we make crafts. We publish an online magazine. We dry tomatoes. We teach yoga and train teachers. We work with community finances and pay bills. We write paychecks. We do financial and investment counseling. We put mail in boxes and label packages. We raise funds to keep things going. We start new foundations to expand Ananda. We attract the devas. We make altars and sacred spaces beautiful. We keep computers and computer systems running. We teach a friend how to use their iPhone or their Kindle. We teach people to meditate and train teachers. We cook meals for family and friends. We take people to the hospital and pray for them during their surgery. We run the expanding light. We organize work days. We maintain the expanding light buildings and gardens. We write books. We create yearly calendars for expanding light classes. We answer emails. We design flyers and brochures. We give massages. We give haircuts. We take photos and make videos. We support and visit meditation groups. We pick figs for our friends. We run boutiques and shrines. We operate costume shops. We care for our parents. We do fire clearing. We start new centers and communities. We smile at strangers. We help people sell things on eBay. We start endowment funds for the future. We donate and tithe. We direct and perform plays. We raise bees and gather honey. We join the local fire department. We run a Spanish ministry and visit Spanish-speaking countries in Europe and L.A., in Latin America, in L.A. We cook three meals a day, 365 days of the year at the Expanding Light. We bring meals to people who are ill. We lead sadhanas. We sew curtains. We fix cars. We use big equipment to keep the property beautiful and clear. We proofread new manuscripts. We babysit. We tell someone, you can do it. We send out mailings. We teach people how to have radiant health. We clean houses. We do landscaping and build fountains. We make someone laugh. We teach the Om technique. We stay calm in a crisis. We host 4,000 people to see the tulips and feed them scones. We share nature with children. We go to book fairs and trade fairs and New Age fairs. We train new people in the art of karma yoga. We feed the birds. We operate databases. We share divine friendship. We attune ourselves with Master. We love God. And we do lots of other things that never make it onto lists. But we do all that, and that's not all. I mean, we could have gone on and on and on. But the beautiful thing of it is you can feel underneath it that we've captured the spirit of what Swamiji said. There's no thought of, I'm doing this for name or fame or gain or any of that. We were having lunch the other Tuesday with three of our guests who are from the center in Rhode Island. And they just were members of the congregation. And it was so beautiful because they said, you know, we don't have any ministers there now. And so we just have to be the ones that give Sunday service and teach the classes and all the things that the ministers did. And they said, we don't really feel like we're qualified, but there's nobody else to do it. And I thought, it's so beautiful, that spirit that you see everywhere. There's so little ego. It isn't, well, I'm an important teacher now. I'm filling in for the ministers. You know, it's just, I'm not qualified, but there was no one else to do it. So I guess it'll be me. And when you look across the whole community, how did we start a school? How did we start a computer department? It was like, I don't know how to do this, but I think it needs to be done, so I'll do it. And in that, what these people said, and it was so beautiful, they said, you know, we're not trained teachers. They were taking meditation teacher training at this point, but they said, whenever we say, I'm willing to do it, God comes through us, and they give us the ability to give the class or the Sunday service or whatever it is. And that's the spirit, that freedom of seeing, not this is my job, but this is how God flows through me. And I think as a community, we have to be mindful of not slipping into the thought, I'm going to work, going to my job, I'm going to the office or the barn or whatever it is. And, you know, I have to just praise one of the most cherished people in this community, Virani. I mean, every time I drive by the goats and I see her, I just get so happy because all I can feel is her joy. And it can be raining, it can be night, the goats can be lost, but there she is, summer, winter, spring, and fall, with this huge smile on her face because she's just serving. And this is how we all have to remember this, not to get locked in little boxes. And maybe it doesn't mean we have to change around all the time. You can keep doing what you're doing. But at the same time, do it with the sense that every day I am choosing to do this. Nobody's making me. I'm not doing it for a paycheck. Such as it is. I am doing it only because I feel the joy when I do it. And if we can keep reminding ourselves, then there's no limit to what we can accomplish here. It just is never-ending flowing forward. And I think really one of the most important things, areas of service that we have for people coming to Ananda is our Karma Yoga program. And that's another person in the community, one of the great heroes is Trimurti. And you know, you go there to the Expanding Light and you see these people who are brand new. They don't even, you know, maybe they've just learned how to meditate, but Trimurti trains them in that art of Karma Yoga. And you, as you watch them clean the tables, sweep the floor in the dining room, you can feel that they're serving, they're doing Karma Yoga. They're not just there, hey, when do we get over this? You know, they are present in the moment. And it is one of the most important services that we do. I've heard from time to time, tradition, I do little satsangs with the Karma Yogis, and the feedback that we get, one person said, this is the most transformative thing I've ever done in my whole life. This is going to change my whole life. I'm not going to stay here. This isn't my, you know, what I'm planning to do with my life, but this is changing how I do everything in the future. And another woman who was a wealthy woman and came and did the Karma Yoga program, she said, you know, at home, I have servants do these things, wash the dishes and clean the tables and sweep the floors, but I'm doing it and I love it. And it was like this huge revelation to her. And so, you know, that's again, meditation and service, one without the other, it doesn't create the whole picture. But if we know how to use the times of activity and see the complete yogic lifestyle, then every moment becomes meaningful. And we can influence nonverbally those around us. We uplift their consciousness. Now, when I was thinking about it, I was thinking, well, what are some of the main keys that we can go deeper in what we're doing so that we see it as service? And I think the first one is to always do it with everything we do with a sense of inner peace. Don't lose your center. And, you know, it's one of the problems we have in the community, I think, is that people can get out of balance by over-serving or working too hard, not by serving too much, but by working too hard, and then tension comes into it. And then we want to control it, and then it just spirals down. But if we can be very mindful, and again, okay, I didn't mean to do this, but I just see people that in my life are great inspirations. Jivada and Netri over at the Crystal Hermitage Gardens. And in the summer nights, after it's dark, we see these little flashlights going around in the gardens. So we said, what's going on out there? And it's Netri and Jivada planning the flower beds, where they're going to be planted. And yet, I have never, ever seen them upset, tight, or nervous, or, you know, you can plant a flower bed all off, and I've done it over there, and they, oh, great job, good, that's a, you know, and that's not how I would have done it, but it looks great, and, but anyway, it just, to have that sense of, no matter how hard you work, if you've lost a sense of inner peace, back off. Stop. That should be your yardstick if you're not serving with the right consciousness. And Swami said something. I was listening to a talk, one of the treasurer's talks on living a balanced life, and he said, no one should be fanatical unless they've already found God. If you found God, you can go ahead and meditate 24 hours a day, or you can serve without ever sleeping or eating. But until you found God, better not to be fanatical. Better to live a balanced life. And so also, you know, for those of us, next week we'll be talking about friendship and marriage and children. But, you know, those of us who do have a family or have had a family or in a partnership, we need to realize that you do need to create a balance if you're just working all the time. Swami said some years ago, you should give as much energy to your family and your home life as you do to your outward service, because they're both areas of service. We'll talk more about that next week. But to really understand that balance in our service is important, and to come from a center of inner peace. Now, another important point, a key point in meditation, in service, is to do it with whatever we're doing with a sense of deep concentration. And without that, and that's how it blends with meditation. And some kind of work lends itself more to concentration. If you're developing a new program for the computer, or if you're working at the clinic and, you know, doing some delicate medical procedure. But all work should be done with concentration, because it's in the concentration on what we're doing that we forget ourselves. And I've shared this story in the past, but it's very, very pertinent to this point of doing what you do with concentration. Some years ago, up at the meditation retreat, this is the lemon story. Dacheshna, it's the lemon story. Anyway, some years ago, before they had any electricity up at the meditation retreat, and it was before the expanding light existed, we were having spiritual renewal week, and we were having a big Indian banquet. And I came up and offered to help, and they said, sure, you can help. We need to juice some lemons. And so they gave me this big box of lemons and a little hand juicer, and I took it out on a table outside, and I started juicing my lemons. And I was really into it. And then a visitor walked by and could see that there was something that looked like fun. And he said, can I help? And I said, sure, just go in and get a juicer. So he came out, he had another little hand juicer, and we divided the lemons into two bowls, and he was doing it and I was doing it. But he wasn't doing it with intense concentration, and his mind was restless, and he wasn't getting the same experience as I was. And he said, looked over and he said, you know, I think your juicer is better than my juicer. And I said, okay, let's trade. So we traded juicers, and we kept going, and same thing. I mean, it was like he just was, you know, kind of, well, I don't know, this is kind of boring. And then he said, you know, I think your lemons are better than my lemons. And so, I mean, they were all from the same box. So I said, okay, let's trade lemons. And so we traded the bowls of lemons, and then after a few minutes, he said, you know, I have to go do something else. And I said, okay, that's fine. But it was very, very illustrative of the point of doing something where you get absorbed in it. And that's where you find the joy. I remember, this is a little bit maybe embarrassing to say, but this is how it happened. When I edited the book Intuition for Starters, and I drew it from about 10 different transcribed talks of Swami on intuition. And that book was created in 2 hours. In the sense that I had all the transcripts in my office, and I focused on it, and in 2 hours, I had different markers for different chapters, colors. This is in this chapter, this is in that chapter, blah, 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 and really, in 2 hours, the whole book was outlined, because I really focused on it, and then the inspiration came through of how to do it. So intense concentration really makes the difference. Another very important thing is, whatever we do, offer it to God. And another way of saying that is to do it with joy. However arduous or unpleasant a task may be, if we do it with joy, then God receives it. Because it's just like, I'm so happy to be able to do this, and I lay it at your feet. And so to try to feel that, and if we're tired, if it's the end of a long day and we just have to finish, make that one more push to get something done, that's especially the time to say, this is for you, God. I'm offering it all. And to just feel that flow of joy in whatever you do. We're having our Development Department, which is the new name for the fundraising department, is going to be doing a big mailing starting on Tuesday. And we helped, hand-addressed 3,000 envelopes with all the names of the people they're sending this mailing out. And it was a perfect opportunity. Every time you wrote that name, you know, the whatever name it was on that envelope, just to feel joy flowing out to that person. And before you know it, you had 200 envelopes done. And it was just, and you felt great. And you felt, what a fun thing to do. And so, so far we've talked about, let's see if I could even recall them. The first one was balance and inner peace. The second one was do it with concentration. The third one is do our service with joy. And then finally, see God as the doer. And sometimes we say that and people say, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what that means. Well, you know what works for me? And this, it's one of the lines in the Nyaswami vow that's very meaningful, to see that God is the project. Not that only that he's doing it, but that God is the website. God is the row of tomatoes. And that there's no doer or thing to be done. It's just God's presence. And that line in the Nyaswami vow is, I will feel that not only the fruit of my labor, but the labor itself is only thine. The labor itself is thine. Act through me always, Lord, to accomplish thy design. That's such a beautiful line. Act through me to accomplish thy design, thy will. And so in everything we do, if we can feel this is God, if we're doing the beautiful Om fountain down at the entryway, working on that, this is God. And then what you do is you draw God's grace into everything that you do. And that grace, just as watching the karma yogis is visible and tangible that they're doing something, the fruit of that labor is visible and tangible and divine. And finally, I just want to offer a new practice. Invite you to join me, let's say, in a new practice that we'd like to initiate in the community. We listed 101 different ways people serve. Well, we all have a particular area of focus, but Swamiji says at the very end of this section on work as service, he says, members should feel that Ananda as a whole, and not the building in which they happen to live at Ananda, nor the area in which they work, is their own. Thus, should their services be required elsewhere, it will be easier for them to view this need as an opportunity for their spiritual growth, and to accept it willingly with non-attachment. Well, I would like to invite us as a community to expand our service and to start something, a new program in the community called Save an Hour, and find 1 hour in the week. Everybody's got 1 hour where they're wasting time or spaced out or not doing anything very productive. And choose an area in the community and serve there that isn't the area that you work and or what you usually do. So save an hour a week for God. And I think if we can do this, it will put the roots down so much deeper in this concept of service. So we listed 101 ways. Maybe none of those appeal to you. And it doesn't always have to be the same thing. Maybe you help with the goats for a couple months, and then maybe you help in the Yale kitchen for a week, and you can do mix and match. But everyone, let's try to find a way that we save an hour for God each week. and dedicate that. And I think if we do that, it will start breaking down. Well, I work here and I work there in this department and that office. But we just all see the freedom of serving together. And I take it seriously. I'm going to do it. And Jyotish said he would do it. And we're going to start every week finding 1 hour where we're just going to do things free and clear with no, not because anybody maybe even knows it, but just knowing in our hearts that we've saved an hour a week for service to God. So let's see if we can do this. So that's all I'm going to say. And now we're going to have some fun. We're going to ask Naba and Stevens, his technical advisor. What this came about a couple of weeks ago, the outreach ministries of the Sangha office had a big meeting. And each of them reported on, each department reported on what they were doing. And Naba, who's a very creative guy, came up with this presentation, and it was so fun and so enjoyable that we said we've got to share it with everybody. So that's what this is.
The screen there. We have, so there's actually two parts to this presentation. It's okay. Just to keep it exciting, get your attention. So there's two parts, and one is unscripted, and that's right now, and the second part's scripted, and that's what Davey was talking about. So the this is Stephen and Chris, who's somewhere in here. We're on the web team together, work on Ananda.org. And Michelle Chabot, right behind Stephen, is going to be joining us in about 6 weeks. So that's great. If you've ever seen a skyscraper being built, the first thing that happens is like the opposite of what you'd expect. People have to, it goes deep, it goes underground, the building does. And it's building a foundation. Then after a long time of building the foundation, it looks like nothing's happening. All of a sudden, you have this steel structure that shoots up into the sky. So on Ananda.org, a lot of what we do, the impact of it is hidden. It's not something we see in person. About 4 years ago, we started the blog that's there. It's a place called Ananda. It became really the first aspect of Ananda.org that made it international, worldwide, in the sense that it was not only people coming to the site from all over the world, but people actually contributing to the site from all over the world. And when that started, my mom showed an article to a friend of hers that was having a difficult time, someone at work. And this person was basically anti-religious, but she read the article and told my mom afterwards, you know, that helped me a lot. Well, we never would have found out about that if not for my mom. So multiply that by about 328,000 people every year, how many visitors we get. And you start to get an idea of the impact that we have, not only through Ananda.org, but all our websites. So people visit from every country and territory on Earth. About 1,000 people visit every day. And on YouTube, which is not on Ananda.org itself, about 500 people watch Swami Kriyananda's videos every day. So that's like Swami, you know, giving a talk to a filled amphitheater every day. That's the outreach that's happening. So this has also been going on for a long time. The website started in 95, 96. And go ahead with the lights. And this is what it looked like at that time. And then this is October 28th. Someone, that's Ganesha. And then 15 years later, it looks like this. So it makes you wonder where it might be in 15 more years. So Stephen is going to take us on a 30-second tour around the world to show us all the different types of people, where they're from, who visit Ananda.org.
So this is one of the technologies today, Google Analytics, that allows us to track and see who in the world is visiting us, where they're visiting us from, what logistics on how long they stayed on the site. So basically it just gives us an idea of the traffic that we get. And as we can see, the darker colors is where we get the most traffic from, and it goes lighter. And like Naba said, every country in the world is represented here in one way or another. And you can see kind of just the numbers. So 100,000 people or a million people from the United States, you know, close to 100,000 from Canada, you know, a large number in India, all over the place, all the way to Saudi Arabia and Egypt, all these countries in the
Speak up, please.
It doesn't have a lot of people coming from London.
One marketing thing that we may be doing is that, as you know, Kent and Trotta just got an RV, so we were thinking about sending them out to all these countries, boosting the ratings of Anandadhar.
So what would it look like if we could lift the hood on the website at any moment and kind of peek in and see what was happening underneath? And I don't think Google didn't say that they created this feature just for this meeting, but it's suspicious because on Monday they released something that lets us do this. So go ahead, Stephen. These are people. We have at least 12 people on the visiting the website right now. One of them searched for Ananda Kriya and went to, let's see if we can see a Kriya Yoga page, one of these pages here. One of them searched on I Feel Sleepy during meditation. There's someone reading Jack Wallace's blog. Someone's learning Hongsa through the meditation technique. And another person's looking at Swami's Gita videos. So these numbers are actually low because Google doesn't count it when someone's watching a video. They kind of, they don't keep track of them. And these are the places where people are visiting in the world right now. New Delhi, that looks like Sydney, and all these different places in the US and Hawaii. So it's like this all the time. Now thank you very much, Stephen. So this kind of made me wonder, would it be possible to provide the same level of service here from Ananda Village? And Maria said once, she said, you know, I think that I don't know if she was joking. She said, I think our line of gurus invented the internet, because otherwise how could we reach so many people, you know, as a group this way? And so that made me think, and I did some research, and you know what I found out? I found out that actually we could do the same thing here from, in fact, we could do it from Rajasee Park, and so that's what this is about. So the same thing, we could, if we didn't have the website, if we had to do reach out in all the same ways. So this is called If the Ananda Website Were the Sangha Office. And it's about ananda.org, because that's what I'm personally connected the most closely to, and I know it the best. So, okay, let me move this around. So, every month, there's one thing I didn't mention, in case that worries you that we can see who's on the site right now. There's something called cookies on your browser, and if you turn off cookies, if you don't accept cookies from Ananda, then we can't see you. But we can't tell who it is anyway, so it's all private in that way. So every month, over 30,000 people, 1,000 each day, would visit Rajasee Park from nearly every country and territory on our planet. Some would stay for more than an hour, while others would visit for just a few minutes and leave after finding what they were looking for, even though they may have had to travel thousands of miles to get here. In fact, most of them would come from outside the United States. 10% would not speak English as a first language, and some would not speak English at all, relying instead on technology to understand us. They would come when they had a specific need or just because they had nothing else to do, going on several intercontinental flights during the day, during downtime at work, that would be normal. Every day, two or three of these people walking into the Sangha office would find Mary Kretzmann and ask for healing prayers. Every day, David E.B. and Krishna, producing recordings of all of our talks and music, would make about 70 CDs, many of them singles. Avital and Skip would print about 120 books every day, and Dave Bingham would create 120 DVDs on topics that people were specifically requesting, with archives going back for years, and they would hand these out without asking for anything in return. If you were to walk through the north door of the Sangha building at 3:17 a.m., on any night, you might see before you Jyotish giving a Sunday service, which he and other ministers would do not only on Sundays, but every day. Swami Kriyananda, in particular, would be lecturing constantly. On your left, you might see a short line forming in front of an office, the Kriya Sangha office. Visitors would be invited to take a number and wait to speak with Devrishi about Kriya Yoga. Walking on, you might find a large crowd gathering and overflowing into a hallway. The attraction, DJ Nayaswami Nalini, whose mixes of songs by Swami and Master would attract worldwide attention. This he would do every hour of every day for crowds of between 11 and 30 people at a time. Finally, squeezing your way past this group into the break area, you would find on your left a large plate, empty except for some crumbs. This is because cookies left in the break area with this many people would be gone instantly. By contrast, on Ananda.org, our cookies can last for as long as 2.5 years. If the Sangha offices were Ananda.org, volunteers would come to us in person. They couldn't serve while living as they do now in Canada, India, Texas, and Sweden. Of the 454 souls, on average, visiting us each day for help with meditation, improving their concentration, some of them would be learning about it for the first time, while others will have been meditating for decades. 80 of them would be learning the Hong Sa technique for the first time. And if my calculations are correct, supporting these visitors would require 2 additional Bharats and 1 additional Savitri working full-time. Every day, a couple of people would ask a question to Devi, Seva, Pranaba, Gopal, or another Ananda minister, some of whom would be specifically flown in for this purpose, like Sadhana Devi, Asha, Jayadev. But their answers would be recorded and would be handed out over the period of several years to hundreds of people with the same question. There are some curious facts. Only a handful of visitors would talk to us, as Krishna said, out of 1,000, one clicks the contact us link. Most would simply hear what we have to say and leave, even among those 1,100 who would visit every week. A number of them, however, would tell us that their lives had been changed by our guru and by this work, and that also some would say that they don't know anyone else who can give them spiritual support or who are even on the spiritual path. Since I came up here, 38 people would have walked through the Sangha building. This would be like having a pilgrim group coming through on tour every 2 minutes. So what's missing from this picture? Well, these statistics don't count the Clarity Magazine website, whose team would be printing tens of thousands of articles every issue. Nikin would have to double his work hours, but this is not mathematically possible. These statistics don't count the websites of Crystal Clarity, who each day would hand out 50 additional copies of Autobiography of a Yogi, or of The Expanding Light, who would teach someone a vegetarian recipe every 41 minutes and 6 seconds, on average, or that of Online with Ananda, whose virtual community has members in New Zealand, Russia, Australia, Croatia, and Peru. Together, these 4 sites have as many visitors as does Ananda.org. These statistics also don't count our colonies, which have visitors from all over the world. In the last 30 days, Ananda LA website had visitors from 68 countries. And finally, they don't count our Facebook and Twitter accounts, which reach at least 35,000 people every week, our iPhone apps, which have over 5,000 downloads every year, or the 235 videos on our YouTube channels, which over the last 3 years have been viewed 635,000 times. They only include those visitors to Ananda.org whose lives have been touched, who have been inspired, who have been changed by what we offer for free on Ananda.org online. Thank you.
It's patently unfair to have to follow that. So, I'm going to talk relatively briefly so that we have time for questions and answers. And I want to talk a little bit about the changing way that we have to do our service, continuing on what Davey was saying. There's somebody I read, probably either Ben Franklin or Einstein, who seemed to be the only people ever quoted about everything. But this person said, if you love what you do, you never have to go to work. And so that's part of the paradigm, the change between work and service and expansion and contraction and getting our energy going positively. You know, last week we talked about the name Yogananda, Bliss Through Yoga, Ananda Community, Bliss or Village Ananda, Bliss through community together, a village together. But I want to talk a little bit about the change of consciousness that we have to work on in ourselves, work on in our community, and then help lead the world into this change of consciousness. And that's the change of consciousness from disunity into unity as we do our service. And I'll use an example that was really, really fun for me. On Saturday during the Harvest Festival, I worked in the permaculture garden. And I want to use the permaculture garden as a kind of a paradigm for what we should be doing, because much of work in America, in the world, and certainly the way that it's done, is done competitively and done for motives that draw energy to the individual without necessarily thinking of the effects and the connections with the whole. And that's in part what we have to turn around. That's the transition from Kali Yuga to Dwapara Yuga, that Kali Yuga separates everything, and in that separation, every separate part has to struggle for its own survival. When the Industrial Revolution started, and the consciousness around the Industrial Revolution created the sense of efficiency and competition, and especially survival by outcompeting other companies, other organisms. That's why Darwin came out of that consciousness, looked at the world, and figured out that this whole world is run by the principle of survival of the fittest. What that says, basically, is that everything is in competition with everything else. And every species is in competition, and within each species, the individuals are in competition. And this huge conflict and warfare is going on, and only the fittest survive, and then gradually evolution follows from that model. And we don't know what's supposed to happen after evolution happens, because it's directionless. It's just whatever's the fittest survives and reproduces. There's a whole other paradigm that's going on that doesn't take into account. One part of it is that evolution is not what it seems on the outside. It's not survival of the fittest, survival of all these separate organisms and entities. Spiritually, there isn't any separation. Spiritually, it's only God playing with God. So how is God trying to survive by being fitter than God and outcompeting himself? It kind of spins the mind around a little bit. It doesn't work. But there's a new, with the change of Kali Yuga, separation and competition, there's a changing paradigm that's happening. And that paradigm change is that the world isn't set up just on competition. It's set up on cooperation. And there's enormous cooperation that goes on. Do you know that in your body, you have, I don't know how many billions and billions of cells that could be considered to be your body. Liver cells and heart cells and muscle cells and bone cells and white blood cells and red blood cells and all of those cells that seem to be you. Do you know that you have 10 times as many cells that are bacteria living either on your skin or in your body as you have your own cells? So who are you? Are you your cells, or are you this kind of, certainly your life depends on this enormous kind of flow of cooperation between interspecies cooperation. And so coming back to the permaculture garden, it was enormously enjoyable because there is this kind of conscious, a creation that's consciously done so that different species can cooperate with each other and help each other. And we've got comfrey growing, and the comfrey is blooming these beautiful, beautiful leaves, and it's sending its roots way, way down into the soil, and those roots are being nourished by bacteria and other organisms, microorganisms in the soil, and it's bringing up nutrients into its leaves. And then every couple of weeks, they cut those leaves off and they put them under the trees. And the nutrients that have come from the deep soil then go into the roots of the trees, and the trees use that to produce everything that they produce. In our case, apples and other wonderful fruit. But that's only one example out of hundreds that go on in that permaculture garden. So there are plants planted because they attract bees, and the bees pollinate. And that's kind of the primary purpose of having that plant in the permaculture garden. Others have multiple purposes. They produce nutrients, they produce fruits, they produce shade for others, they help the soil, and on and on and on. But this beautiful intercooperation of different species and this sharing is a perfect example of what we need to do in our lives in terms of reaching out and seeing unity where otherwise we see disunity. So if you work in the market, you ought to be producing a permaculture market. It's already there if you think about it. You pick up a box of cereal. I would imagine that in a box of cereal, there has been the cooperative efforts of, 100 million people in that box of cereal. There have been farmers. There have been people who work in the plants that make the farm equipment. There are shippers. There are truckers. There are business people. There are people taxing those business people. There are government officials. By the time you get, if you could look out and see all the threads in that single box of cereal, it would certainly be millions and maybe hundreds of millions of people. And so that market down there is this tremendous web of connection that goes out into the world. And it's our job to see those connections, because seeing connections is part of what produces unity. Seeing separation produces disunity. And so yoga, which is unity, is all about seeing connections. So in the work that we do, part of what we need to really focus on is seeing how to connect with other people, interspecies connections, and all of that. Now, that becomes kind of a mental play if it's only up in the head. So taking it practically, what does it mean to do that practically? For one thing, it means that, as Davy was saying, that we need to see that God is there present, not only in everything, but through everything. And so if we can keep in mind the consciousness that God is there, then it's much easier to see the unity. Or, if you like to personalize it, see Master there. I've told this story many times, but it's very touching, of a young boy about 6 or 7 years old who was a disciple of Satya Sai Baba. And one weekend, this young boy who had been living in the ashram went home to visit his family. And when he came back, Satya Sai Baba said, "Did you see your family?" And the little boy said, "Oh, Baba, all I saw was you." And he said, "Well, didn't you see your mother and your father?" He said, "Oh, Baba, all I saw was you. What about your brothers and sisters? Didn't you play with them?" "Oh, Baba, all I saw was you. well, didn't you see your friends and others that you enjoy? Oh, Baba, don't tease me anymore. All I saw was you. Well, that consciousness, if we can hold it, even a fraction of it, if all we see is God or Baba or Master in what we do and what we, who we interrelate with, it changes the whole action of our interrelationship. So one principle is to actively, consciously try to see God and try to see the connections there. Another principle is to consciously work on producing a positive flow of energy, so that a positive flow of energy, one that's going up the chakra system and bringing the energy up, and especially to the spiritual eye, connects. When the energy goes down, it disconnects. That's the principle of duality. And so working with a positive energy, so when you find yourself slipping into something that looks critical or negative or complaining or separative, to catch that as soon as you can. And don't worry so much on convincing the mind, because the mind won't be convinced as long as the energy is going negatively. All the mind will do, if you try to convince it, is give you reasons why it's really right to feel critical, why that person really is a jerk. And it's right, and it's for their good that I'm being critical. And, you know, so the rational, the mind will follow the heart, or in this case, the direction of energy. So to work toward finding unity, control the flow of the energy first, and don't worry so much about your thinking process. It will follow along if you get the energy right. Swami gave a beautiful example or exercise for this in the Success Lessons courses. And the reason it was brought to mind is Dharmaraj just sent it out to the LA group. But Swami was talking about how different people radiate energy as if they're radiating different colors. And so some radiate beautiful, pure colors. Different people radiate different pure colors. Some people radiate kind of muddy, dark colors, and so on. But everybody is radiating colors. And so if you see people as radiating that energy, that's what produces the aura, radiating that energy. And what you want to do is you want to feel energy in the heart, and then bring that energy up and transmit it through the spiritual eye, and that expands the aura, and that upward direction of energy also makes the energy pure. It does another thing. It makes the energy magnetic. And so the exchange of energy with other people is based on magnetism. And people will draw, especially those who are open to the magnetism that you're putting out, will be attracted to that. And that's why positive people will attract positive people around, and people going through a negative period and complaining and griping will attract people to them that want to hear about that. And so catch the energy and make it upward directed and positive. And then I don't want to speak too much just theoretically, because each of us have to find kind of the techniques that work for us. But the real key to it all is to keep the energy flowing positively. And then the final thing that I want to say is that if that energy is flowing positively, then let it flow to other people with a great deal of kindness and care. If the energy is kind toward them, one of our primary, things that we say about the community is that people are more important than things. If we concentrate on things, We don't care so much about people. But if we concentrate on people, the things will follow. They'll get done. The magnetism, the energy will create the environment where things happen almost magically, almost automatically. So in working with other people, work always kindly and supportively. That will not only help their energy be positive, but help our own energy be positive. But this deep sense of connection with God and with each other is what brings about unity. And if we can do that with each other in a small community, relatively speaking, like this, and then radiate it the way Naba was talking, radiate that vibration out. Why are there over 1,000 people a day who crowd into the Sangha office? Because they're getting something positive in doing that. They're getting love, they're getting teachings, they're getting kindness, they're getting care, they're getting something that feeds them, and they want that, and they come back. So let's take that kind of vibration and make it more and more powerful in our lives. Really, when Swami named the first monastic order we had, he named it Friends of God. That means not only being friends to God, it means being God's channels of friendship to everyone else in the world. And if we can function primarily through friendship, positive energy, and connection, we will help bring a whole new way of seeing life into the world. And that's a large part of what Master came here to help us do. So as Devi started out saying, there's the meditation part that produces that, but there's also equally important our active daily life, the service part, that produces that. Master said meditation should be active service and service should be active meditation. And if we can do it that way, it'll all meld together into one beautiful, harmonious flow. And so service, however we do it, in the community, the various areas, as Devi said, 101, and could have gone on. So it's obvious that the particular area is not the essential thing. It's the quality of consciousness with which we do that kind of service that makes it fun, makes it joyful, and makes it holy. So let's have time for some questions and answers.
When you talked about concentration, if you're intensely concentrated on something, then there's self-forgetfulness in that, which I find reassuring, because when I do a lot of very high concentration work, and I've heard for years of, oh, you should be practicing japa or thinking about God, and it's like I have to force part of myself not to concentrate on it. So I just wondered if you could expand on that a little bit, of how self-forgetfulness is, in a way, remembrance of God, when you're deeply concentrated like that.
You want to do that?
Well, I think you said it pretty well. You know, let's look at it a little bit.
Could you repeat the question?
Okay. The question is, sometimes there's a little bit of conflict between deep concentration as being the right thing to do, but then also the sense, well, you're supposed to be doing japa and you're supposed to be thinking about God and so on. That kind of splits the energy. And so to talk about that a little bit, deep concentration of any kind is going to help towards self-forgetfulness. That's why the whole entertainment industry is been produced. That's why movies are so engrossing, because it gets everybody to concentrate. Master said, everybody at a movie is a yogi. When they go out, they're not anymore. You know, they're deeply concentrated on whatever is happening. And as I say, the whole entertainment industry is built upon making it so interesting and engrossing that you are deeply concentrated, and in that process you forget yourself, you forget your worries, you forget your anxieties, you forget all this stuff going on. And so it's innately refreshing, or usually refreshing. It's really a kind of a mimic of what happens in deep sleep, which is that the energy, Master said that we couldn't obviously live without sleep, but deep sleep allows the energy to withdraw completely into the spine and into the chakras and the higher nervous system, and that refreshes us so that we're able to go about the next day. Well, deep concentration gives us a kind of a imitation deep sleep, because it doesn't withdraw the energy, but it unscatters the energy. So it makes the energy focused on one thing. So is that innately spiritual? Well, yes and no. The concentration is innately spiritual, but the direction of the concentration also has to be considered. I would imagine that a sniper is intensely concentrated on the task at hand if he's going to be successful. Does that make shooting, assassinating a person innately spiritual? No. So you have to also consider what you're doing and what you're concentrating on. And, you know, I won't go on at length, but we can concentrate very deeply on some very negative things. And so that the mere act of concentration isn't spiritualizing, but concentrating and having the energy somehow in an upward direction. And it doesn't matter so much the form, because, you know, if you're doing programming or something of that sort, if you feel that that programming is going to be of benefit to the world somehow, then your concentration on that is an uplifting act that will benefit others and draw about unity in the world. If you were concentrating on something for a yogi, concentrating on something that would be harmful to the world, just because you made a whole lot of money doing it, would be not a spiritual act. So you have to look at not only the quality of the concentration itself, but the quality of what you're concentrating on. And if the what you're concentrating on is beneficial, then that kind of dharmic activity in and of itself should be uplifting. Then if you can also bring into that, not in a distracting way, but in a kind of an umbrella way, the fact that it is really your God, doing an activity that's done by God for God, but you can't carry that thought as a distracting thought. It's just a kind of an umbrella thought. Or as I think it was Ramakrishna said, be like the mother cow who's eating the grass and chewing the cud, but always in the back of the mind knows where the calf is.
Maybe I'll just answer real briefly and see if there's another question. It's also, you know, the brilliance of the early, of the sages who gave us yoga, the different paths of yoga. And, you know, for some, to the serviceful, thou art service. To the lover, thou art love. To the yogi, thou art bliss. So, you know, for some people, chanting and devotion is absolutely absorbing for them. For some, deep, abstract thinking is deeply absorbing to them. I remember once my dear friend Uma was asking, who just was a very devotional person. She heard that Gyandev had a PhD in mathematics, and she always had a hard time. She said, why would you want to do that? But it's just, he said, I found it beautiful. And so it's just our different temperaments. And if you say to a jnana yogi, oh, you should be chanting all the time, they would feel it was superficial. And if you said to a bhakti yogi, you should have deep and personal concentration, their hearts would feel empty. So everyone has their way, and you just have to find your way and then go deep with it.
But there would be concentration in both of those. The bhakti yogi would be absorbed in their devotional chanting, and the jnani would be absorbed in the discrimination. So concentration is necessary.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, going up. Oh, there's Timothy.
Can we get a copy of your 101 list?
Yeah, I thought it's out. How should I get it to people?
Okay,
why don't you email me if you want it, and then I'll just, because I just have it on my computer. Or do you want to put it in the Villager, or? It's kind of long.
Too long. Seeing Timothy reminds me a piece of
good
news.
Just finish. If you want it, just email davy@ananda.org, and I'll email it to you.
Seeing Timothy reminds me a piece of good news. We like to share a little good news. We started a program last week at the Expanding Light called Living Social. And it's kind of like a Groupon, if you know what that is, where you have a coupon and gives you a discount. And so we're always trying out new ideas to get more visitors, and especially new visitors, to the Expanding Light. So the first kind of email by this company, Living Social, to an area within 500 miles of here went out, and it went out to about 100,000 people. Yeah, around 100,000 people. In 2 days, we have, as of when we came into the room, 84 new signups at the Expanding Light. So how fun is it to find something that actually works?
Okay, well, I think that's... Oh, Avita.
I'm just wondering, if you have a choice in a moment to work a job that you know you really love doing and you feel like you get a lot out of it, or another job where you might not enjoy it as much, but there's a lot to be learned because you're not as good at it. How do you balance choosing between the two?
It depends if you like to be challenged or not. Well, you know, I don't mean to be flip. The question was just for the recording. If you have a choice between a job that you really enjoy and you know how to do well, or something that you don't know so well but you know there'll be a lot of growth in it, which should you choose? Well, all I can say is Swami seems to drop people off in the deep end of the pool where they have no idea how to swim. So there must be some spiritual value in that. And, there's something about opening yourself up to the possibility of, I'm not comfortable in this. I feel like I'm going to make a big fool of myself. I think I'm really going to blow it, but I think I'm supposed to do this. And I think it's really good to challenge yourself that way. And maybe if you don't have a choice of job changing, just try to find something you're introducing into your life all the time that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, that challenges you, that just, I don't know how to do this, but I think I'm going to try. And some of the people I admire the most have, when Swami asks them, will you go do this? And they just say, sure, Swami, and they have no idea how to do it. And they just walk off. We've said this many times before, but one of my favorite quotes in all literature is from The Lord of the Rings, when little Frodo is asked to go off on this great quest, and, you know, all the great warriors and heroes are hesitating, and little Frodo says, I will go, though I do not know the way. And that's really the story of Ananda, so...
That doesn't mean that you shouldn't also do some things that you enjoy. A little mix and match, but not at the same time necessarily. Okay, multitasking is not a yogic activity. So partly in answer to that and partly in answer to yours, Satyaki, that trying to do two things at once, but doing different things at different times with full concentration, that's very good.
Okay, well, maybe that's it for tonight. So next week we'll be focusing on marriage and children
and friendships. And relationships.
And pets. Okay, God bless you.